Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Last year, I spent more money on spilled liquor in bars from one side of this world to the other than you make.
It's time for Dirt and Sprague.
You're talking to the Rolex-wearing, diamond ring-wearing, kiss-stealing, woo!
With Andy Dirt Johnson and Brendan Sprague.
Wheeling-dealing, limousine-wrecked, jet-flying, son of a gun.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
And I'm having a hard time holding these alligators down. Woo!
The Fan.
All right, welcome back in. Second hour on The Fan here. Dirt and Sprague with you on this Tuesday. I have a buddy getting married. He's trying to sort out the booze situation.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm like, hey, man, I know a couple people in the industry might be able to get a keg for a really cheap price.
Sure. Hit up our boys at Pelican or something. Hey, can you help me out?
Yeah. And I said, I can do that for you. I'd love to do that for you. Because he's having like 400 people there.
Whoa.
He goes, the venue just told us that we can't bring in our own booze.
Yikes.
I'm like, what?
When's the wedding?
It's not till July.
Oh.
Your bachelor parties and your weddings are like very close.
Right around the same area.
Your bachelor party is a week before his. And then your wedding is
July 25th.
July 25th. His is like July 15th.
Oh, wow.
You guys are like right by each other.
That's why you don't do a venue.
That's the sort of thing. Well, if you are looking at venues, you have to sort all that out before you sign the deal.
Yeah.
You should ask that.
That's on the list of questions you need to ask ahead of time.
I was kind of thinking, like, I think we could walk it in and nobody would say anything.
There's all sorts. I mean, that's dangerous.
Is there real security everywhere?
That's dangerous because then there's lawsuits that can happen if you're like bringing some outside booze and you're chugging a fifth of vodka on the dance floor and somebody gets in trouble.
If you've got a venue and you got 400 people coming, one, it's probably. They'll have a couple of people monitoring everything.
Yeah, he just said they have no food and no booze are allowed to be brought into this venue.
Yeah, we looked at places like that, and that was an immediate no for me. I was like, I want to be able to pick the booze. I want to be able to pick the food. I get you can go do like taste tests and stuff, and you can pick from their food items, but that was kind of out for me. Those are the only two things I'm in control of.
I took a note of this, and I didn't think I would start the second hour with it. But I kind of want to. Did you watch the halftime thing with the great college football players of all time?
I did, yes.
Kind of cool to see some of those guys, the way they're aging. Like, I saw Earl Campbell. I missed Earl Campbell playing live.
Still looks like a badass.
But he's one of my favorite highlight players to go back and randomly just watch. And he still looks like he would kick everybody's ass.
Herschel Walker is...
not aging.
It doesn't make sense how fit that guy is for his age.
He's Jennifer Lopez. He's the male Lopez.
How old is Herschel Walker?
57.
He's 57 years old?
He's 50 freaking seven.
That doesn't make any damn sense.
I looked it up because I saw, whoa, Herschel Walker's only 44, huh?
He's looking fit, man. Did he retire like 5 years ago? What the hell?
Didn't he become a fighter, like a UFC cage fighter?
I think so, yeah.
Never want to get in the ring with that guy.
He was born in 1962.
Look, this list is amazing, and it's truly a very debatable topic. But I thought the NCAA and college football specifically really made an effort to keep out one guy who, to me, is very clearly a top 10 player. We're really going to act like Reggie Bush isn't a top 10 greatest college football player of all time? Are we really going to play that game?
There was nobody within the last 30 years. Who was the most recent? I mean, Barry Sanders.
It was Barry Sanders.
And he played in 1988, 89?
86 to 88. That's the most recent player on that list.
There's nobody with no college football player within the last 30 years is top 10 worthy?
But we have to make sure we have Red Grange from 1923 in.
Yeah, Jim Thorpe back in the 1920s.
You know, some of those guys, I get, like Archie Griffin won back-to-back Heismans. I understand that. Roger Staubach at Navy. Yeah. Okay, I get it. Gale Sayers, Barry Sanders. Reggie Bush doesn't make your top 10 all time.
I'm with you on that.
I even was like, did Tebow even get screwed out of this deal? He won two championships in a Heisman.
He won two championships, a Heisman. He was the face of the sport for three, 4 years.
Yeah, he still kind of is a face of the sport.
Yeah, that one, because I saw a picture from Barry Sanders pregame, and they were all like in a booth watching it. I didn't know that was happening. I thought, what a coincidence. All these great running backs and football players are just watching the game together. I wonder what, that's cool. They just get together and do this.
Well, you ever heard of the Heisman house?
Yeah, right.
They all just hang out in one house, evidently.
That's it, apparently. And then that halftime performance came on. And look, you don't mean like offense to the old-time guys, but some of me just scoffs at when you say somebody from the 1930s is a better player than Reggie Bush. Like, the sports are night and day different. I get it. Maybe if those guys were in this era, they would have been better, you know, bigger, stronger, faster athletes, all that kind of stuff. But you can't tell me that Jim Thorpe was better than Reggie Bush with a straight face.
I'm looking at this list, and I'm really wondering how many players of the top 10 would you clearly say you think were better than Reggie Bush?
Well, Barry Sanders, undoubtedly, because of the records that he hold. Herschel Walker, I probably would still say so. Bo Jackson is tough to top.
Oh, Bo Jackson.
I mean, I don't know how you go ahead of that. And you know, there is some, I mean, I believe Archie to this day is still the only guy to win two Heismans, right? Nobody else has done it?
Yeah.
Correct, yeah. So he's the only guy to win two Heismans. That counts for something.
He was also, I mean, they kind of was the precedent of, we're not doing this again.
Yeah, nobody's
giving
done
a guy
it.
Back to
that
back.
Was in the 1970s. Nobody's done it since. And a couple guys have come close and have tried to, but nobody's done it since. So all of those count for something. But I think after those names, I would probably put Reggie Bush number five on my list.
Are you avoiding the whole controversy from USC? Because one, everybody's gotten over that, and two, nobody took your punishment seriously. He's still the Heisman Trophy winner in my mind. You can't vacate what they did. That tape exists. You can't delete and burn all the tape, right? So no offense to Red Grange, but I'm fairly certain Reggie Bush is a much better athlete than Red Grange, and he had just as great a career.
I know. I don't know if it was controversy or not. The only thing that made me not think it was the fact that they didn't have anybody in the last 30 years. Like, you could argue Reggie Bush has been the best player in the last 30 years.
It's pretty disrespectful to not have one player from 1990 to, like, 2016 whatever. Yeah, from modern college football.
You got to spread it around, man. Vince Young had an incredible college career. You mentioned Tim Tebow and what he did. How about Charles Woodson being a defensive player to win a Heisman Trophy, to do it punt returns, offense, defense?
Is he the only one in history to do that, defensive player to win the Heisman? Or is he, like, the second?
In modern era, yeah.
I think in the modern era, for sure.
There might have been somebody back in like the 1940s that did it.
That doesn't count.
Well, Jim Thorpe probably did it way back in the day.
When they had 10 people that wanted to play. Well, Jim, that means something different in 2019, so be careful what you wish for.
No, I did. I saw that last night, and I thought, really?
Lists always get me. Lists will always get me in the top 10 in this, the top 5, and it will always get me to click or watch. And, you know, I appreciate history. I really do. There's a lot of great players that get remembered, and I'm glad for that. But to tell me Reggie Bush is not a top 11 player, it's 11, not even 10, it's utterly ridiculous.
So I just pulled up a random Bleacher Report list to see how similar it was. Here is their top 10. Herschel Walker was number one. Red Grange was number two. He rushed for, in 20 games, he rushed for 3,300 yards, an additional 253 yards, 31 touchdowns.
Cool.
He completed 40 of 82 passes for 575 yards.
Oh, this is when the quarterback literally did all of it. They threw passes to themselves.
In his first game, he rushed for 3 touchdowns against Nebraska in 1923. So Red Grange was number 2. Doak Walker was number 3. Archie Griffin, number 4. Barry Sanders, number 5. Jim Thorpe, number 6.
Did they just steal Bleacher Report's list?
Tony Dorsett was number 7. No, Dorsett wasn't in the top 10, or was he there last night?
No, he wasn't in the top 11.
Sammy Baugh, number 8. Roger Staubach, number 9. Bo Jackson, number 10.
Yeah.
So then you get some more modern guys. So Tebow was 11. Woodson was 12. They didn't even have Earl Campbell in their top 10. John Elway was 14. That's another name.
Yeah.
A little more recently. Vince Young, 16. Jim Brown. They had Jim Brown, 17, and ESPN named him the best player of all time.
Which, it's Jim Brown. I mean, what's my argument on Jim Brown, really?
I have no issue with that.
Groundbreaking football player who changed everything. But, yeah, I don't know. It felt like they did that on purpose, because I don't know any other explanation for why he wouldn't be.
Well, Reggie Bush never played college football. Didn't you know that, Brandon?
I know they scrubbed
all of his
records.
Trying. He didn't play. He didn't win the Heisman. They didn't win a national championship.
They're trying to tell us
none of it ever happened.
Hey, what did we make of the Pac-12 officials representing the conference last night in that championship game? And we got a couple more things to listen to or a get to, I should say, in college football, and then we'll change gears a little bit. Washington State, by the way, they hired their new head coach. We'll get to that later on. We got NFL True or False at the bottom of the hour. A whole lot more to get to, and we'll get to it next on The Fan. A very fair point at the Fan text line 55305, and I meant to say this. I kind of blanked. O.J. Simpson also not on that list. And we're just going to avoid all awkward situations, apparently.
I don't know.
He just had an amazing career at USC. No big deal.
I think you were gone, and I meant to talk about it, and I didn't get to it. There was a crazy story on ESPN about his Heisman Trophy. Did you guys happen to... Oh, Swag's now gone. Did you happen to ever read that? Somebody put together like a piece of what happened to it. He sold it and he's been trying to get it back, and it ended up with like a homeless guy, and it's been living on the streets of like it's been living on the streets of LA for like 30 years. This homeless dude like slept with the trophy.
There's an O.J. Simpson Heisman Trophy legit with a homeless guy right now in Los Angeles.
I'll try and go find it. It came out, I feel like, in early December or late November, somewhere around there, and I remember having it in my show notes of wanting to bring it up, but it was the craziest damn thing I had ever read. I can't remember if it was stolen or if he sold it initially because he needed the money, but it ended up being like a homeless guy owned it for a while, and it was just hanging out on the streets of L.A.
Jeez Louise, man.
So there's your update on O.J. By the way, and for the people that said, like, for Jim Thorpe, so we had a couple people texting saying you're underselling Jim Thorpe.
I didn't even take Jim Thorpe. I took Red Grange off.
Sure. For Jim Thorpe, though, here's what I want to ask. Like, is it just reading his – is it even possible to watch his highlights?
No.
His best years in college were 1911 and 1912.
Okay, I'm going
to
look it up.
And do you know what college he went to?
Well, I had the list up here.
Yeah, he played at Carlisle College.
Carlisle College.
The Carlisle Indians.
Well, are they still the Indians? Or they changed their name?
I don't even know if Carlisle is still a thing. Is it still a school?
Okay. I brought up Jim Thorpe highlights, and all you can find are NFL, and it's like the last year of his career.
Like the very end.
So, look.
So that's my thing. Like, you can read the numbers and say that. I get it. Like, he was probably incredibly dominant for his era. It was 1911.
I guess that's my point is, like, I do this with the NBA.
World War One.
I really respect, I really do, I respect and appreciate all the greats that help shape and form the game.
Carlisle has not played college football since 1917.
But, for example... If you told me LeBron had to play one-on-one with George Mikan, who would you pick? Right. Like, right. I don't understand. There's something about admitting great athletes and greatness in general in certain eras that people just dig their heels in and they say, no. He's not a better athlete. He's not a better player. Jim Thorpe probably did a ton of great things. Maybe he did. Maybe he
probably didn't. Dominated college football in 1911. I'm sure he did.
But Jim Thorpe was not as good an athlete as, like, half the athletes since 1999. Right. It's just the natural evolution of things. And right. A guy like Reggie Bush was a better player. Yeah. I'm sorry. It's okay. He's still great.
Quit underselling Jim Thorpe.
I guess.
You?
Yeah. Hey, I you know who the best thrower of the highlights. Football has ever been is Norm Van Brocklin.
Norm Van Brocklin. He's the GOAT quarterback of all time.
It's like, okay, so Marcus Mariota wasn't better at Oregon. Okay, I got it. All right. I want to stay in college football. You made a deal of this yesterday. We talked about it. The Pac-12 officials.
Yes, they reffed the game last night.
Boy, it was on full display on social media yet again. Everybody in the Pac-12 region just trashing and dumping all over the officials before anything really happened.
I actually thought they were pretty good last night.
You know, that was kind of my takeaway. Like, the offensive pass interference, if you don't like that, I get it. But he does clearly grab the DB's shoulder and kind of pull him. The targeting call, I thought the reaction to the targeting call was more about the call, the targeting rule itself, yeah, more than it was the call, because the kid clearly went at him with the crown of his helmet.
Yeah, maybe hit the shoulder pad first or whatever, but that's what you have to do when the rule is written the way it is.
You know, maybe a bad one or two calls. I didn't walk away going, oh God, the game was really impacted by the officiating. In fact, no. I walked away going, I wish these Pac-12 refs, this version of them, exist all the time, where they largely let the teams just play it out.
Yeah.
They let them talk trash. They let them their thing. They didn't overreact. And that was probably a mandate by the NCAA. Can we get that mandate in the Pac-12 instead of every time a player looks at another player, there's an unsportsmanlike penalty called? Like,
right.
That is how I want Pac-12 football to be officiated, even though last night wasn't all the way perfect.
Yeah, they did benefit, though, I think, from having a game that was a 17-point margin that didn't have a lot of intrigue late. You know, when LSU scored to go up by whatever it was, 10, in the third quarter. It kind of felt like they were pulling away, and so maybe there's a different feeling about it if that's a close back-and-forth game and Clemson's driving late, and then you got to throw a flag on a certain play. I think maybe then the fielding is different. They benefited, I think, a tad from having a game get out of hand. But I didn't have a huge issue with any of the calls. That wasn't offensive pass interference in my mind, but it doesn't have an impact on the game, largely. I know they took points off the board for Clemson. Clemson wouldn't win that game, man. Whether you give them that touchdown or not, they weren't going to win that football game, and I could see it either way. They both had their hands on each other. I prefer just to let them play in that moment. The only animosity I saw again boil over last night, and it's something that we've argued for months on this show, even years since the rule came into existence, is that the targeting rule is dumb.
Yeah.
It's stupid. I get that you want to clean up the game and you got to do what you can. There are different levels of targeting, just like there's different levels of other kind of personal fouls. When you have a guy that kind of incidental, maybe he did lower his head, but it wasn't done in the purpose of trying to injure the other player, give him a 15-yard flag. I'm totally fine with that. I don't like the ejection unless it's a hit where somebody is headhunting over the middle of the field that you can clearly see, yes, his intent was dirty. That was a dirty play. So a lot of those are just bang, bang, and you're just kind of lowering your head or the receiver's head drops down. It's just incidental contact. I don't like kicking somebody out of game for that.
You know, the only thing that I have that is it goes against what you're saying is I think we would run into far too many different interpretations of intent. Now, I get it. Like, I've never liked the ejection part of it. I really especially hate the ejection in the second half. Means you're suspended for the first half of the next game.
For the next game, yeah.
It's just it's such an overreaction punishment. And
I also
the only
don't like they don't let them watch out on the sideline, too.
Right,
like
they actually make them leave
the field.
Well, all this is a real overreaction. Or not overreaction. It's a reaction to the concussion stuff, yeah. Really, right? Yeah. You want to limit the helmet-to-helmet contact, and I get that part of it. Logically, it makes sense to me. There is an element, however, like last night's game, Skalski clearly is leading with his helmet. He's also, you kind of watch the form that he's going in. He's kind of making how you and I were taught a good tackle, right? You don't want to lead necessarily with your helmet, but the form he had when he tackled him, he did make some contact with his helmet. I just thought that's a dude that plays hard. And when he plays football, he's hitting somebody and leaving a message like, hey, don't come across the middle here. Yeah. I'll take you out. I thought it was a good football play. But by the letter of the rule, that's targeting. I remember seeing an article 2 years ago, and apologies because this is kind of me admitting to you I'm being lazy. I haven't seen a follow-up article that's actually proved that targeting and ejecting players is dropping targeting calls. When I read about that just a couple years ago, what I had read is nothing was different.
No, it
that
wasn't
they had implemented
it.
This rule and people were still kind of targeting. If you go intent route dirt, I worry more about when a player does lower the helmet in replay, you could absolutely make the
I'm
call
that
the intent is dirty, but that doesn't mean it was dirty. It could just be bang, bang,
intense,
or a guy going
to
hit with a shoulder, but the offensive player goes a different way, so he hits him with the helmet. Intent is a very subjective thing that I think referees would still screw up even if we went to that level of, if it's dirty intent, eject him. If it's not, penalize him, and that's it.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. There's a gray area there. It would be tough. Like Clowney against Wentz, was there intent?
Do you think it was dirty?
I thought it was a dirty hit. Did I think he did it intentionally to injure him? No.
Right.
So there's a gray area there. And I understand what you're saying. And there's already a lot of calls in football that are gray areas that are subjective. I hate to see a guy that I didn't feel like did anything wrong who's playing in a national championship game.
And there's not a reputation for Skalski, to my knowledge, of him being a dirty player.
I didn't watch every Clemson game this year, but no, to my knowledge, there isn't. And that's the biggest moment of his, I don't know if you probably played last year too, but you're playing in a national championship game and you get tossed for something like that. I just don't like it. I think it's pretty simple to have back-to-back. If you do it twice in a game, then there's an ejection, just like other personal fouls. If you have a dirty hit that isn't helmet to helmet, they give you a personal foul call and they say it's a yellow card situation. Yeah. There's your one. You do it again. Now you're out of the game. And then maybe that shapes everybody up and you say, I'm not going to hit with my helmet anymore.
I'm more into that. Like the whole one strike, two strike, three strikes, you're out. I'm more into that kind of discipline than automatic ejection. Because again, I just don't believe that a lot of these kids that get ejected are going, I'm going to really injure this person with the crown of my helmet.
Right.
Like Skalski, I would be okay where if they get a targeting, they have to sit out the rest of that possession, whether that's a play or six plays. All right, you're ejected from this possession, but you get to come back. And then if you get to a third, or even if you want to go second to really limit it, then maybe you talk about ejections with a second or a third, because at that point, the player should be uber cautious of not leading with the crown or seriously injuring somebody.
Right, and then it changes the way you tackle a little bit. And look, that's the intent of the rules. You're trying to change the way that it's happening. But there were, and I always make note of it, whenever you have somebody get ejected for a call like that, I love then paying attention to other helmet-to-helmet hits that happen, because there's dozens of them throughout the course of a football game. And after he was ejected, I probably counted four or five others that, if you're calling that a targeting and you're ejecting him for, you could have done it to four or five other guys. And that's the point of the rule that I don't like, is that you're kind of picking and choosing when you're throwing it. Oftentimes it's when a quarterback gets hit, but you have so many times a linebacker and a running back lower each other's heads at each other, a tight end and a safety, whatever the case may be. You have those hits all the time in football, and they just kind of pick and choose when they want to toss a guy out of a game.
Yeah, I can't believe we agree on that. I thought we might disagree. I really didn't think their referee performance was all that bad repping the Pac-12.
No, I thought the only big takeaway we haven't gotten from the game last night was when Odell Beckham Jr. was giving cash handshakes to the LSU players.
Yeah, how about all the snitches on that too?
Yeah.
Why are we posting the video? They can't just get a cash handshake? They probably earned
it. Did you see what he claimed today?
No, what's the reasoning for the cash handshake?
It's not real cash, bro.
Oh, he's carrying wads of fake cash.
I got a little Monopoly money
in my
pocket.
Funny money there.
Yeah, come on. I would never give real money. Wow. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, because that's never happening at LSU or any other SEC school,
like,
right?
That happened on the field after the national championship game. Odell Beckham Jr. took out a wad of money and was giving cash handshakes to LSU wide receivers.
I believe he was also caught telling one of the wide receivers, either Chase or Jefferson, that he could sell his cleats for $200,000.
Well, I think both those guys are gone, right?
Chase has to be back. I think he has to have one more year.
Oh, okay, so he's got one more year.
Jefferson's absolutely gone.
Yeah, so he didn't care anyways. You take that cash handshake all you want.
By the way, great season for Joe. I don't think this takes anything away. What a stable of wide receivers to have,
man. Incredible. And Gordy brought that up earlier when we talked to him from LSU, saying they had underutilized wide receivers. Incredible talent, because they've recruited the position so well.
Yep.
It was like, we got to find a way to get these guys more involved and have a more efficient passing game. But I quite enjoyed that OBJ was giving cash handshakes after the game.
Looked like a bunch of Jarvis Landry's and OBJ's out there playing for him all year.
Did you see Booger McFarland too on the sidelines yelling at the refs?
Did you see him at the coin flip?
I did at the coin flip, yeah.
God, enjoy the notoriety and the access, bud, because you're probably not going to be the play-by-play guy anymore for Monday Night Football. So LSU making their way. They're close. They're not quite there. They're not quite Oregon State wide receiver U, but
no, they're not quite to OSU's level.
They're making quite a statement, I'll say that. All right, we got a whole lot more to get to. We got NFL True or False next on The Fan.
Hey, welcome back in 133. Hope your Tuesdays are going well. We got people tweeting us pictures of Snowmageddon 2020. Stay strong out there, folks. Stay strong.
We will rebuild.
Been a couple footers behind you. I've been keeping an eye on it.
Get out of here.
Just in case it's coming for you. I'll let you know. I got my eyes out the window.
It's sunny right now. Yeah,
you missed it. There's a flurry early. We had a 30-second flurry.
Where?
They're right behind you, right there. Yeah. It was a danger zone, man. I almost had to tell you to run.
There's a seal swimming in there. It's nice right now.
There's a seal out there.
You're not going to let this go, are you? Not till Friday.
No, I never will. I never will.
Oh, okay.
No, it's weather. You know me. You know me. I love my snow. Okay, I get my jollies up whenever it's threatening to snow, and then it goes away, and then I get excited for the next one.
Trivia question for you. What was the last year we went without having any snow documented in Portland?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Well, that's gone now because it snowed today. Last night.
I mean, it did
snow.
It did.
There was snow on cards.
I mean, like,
well,
at least
it's going to be measurable snow,
thank you.
I think, out at the airport.
Thank you.
Is that the official measurement?
I think that's the official National
Weather Service.
Did it snow
at the airport today, 55305?
Actually, just landed. Tons of snow here.
There's a foot out there. I don't know. That's a good question. Do you know the answer to that?
No.
Oh, okay. Okay. I like that. Just throw it out there.
I wanted to say it like I knew and then hope that you knew or that Swag knew and then just come back and tell you I don't know.
I have no clue. Okay. We got a lot still to get to, including what Tony Romo's worth. Also, Washington State has made a new hire. We'll get to that coming up probably at crunch time. But let's do some NFL True or False, shall we? Now, looking at last week.
How do we do there in the playoffs?
I dominated the weekend at
4-0.
And you two gentlemen went 2-2. And the quote of the week, though, we have a quote of the week.
We have a quote.
Samir Sprague.
Every once in a while, somebody feels strongly in an opinion. and they say something so emphatically that it makes me write it down on the sheet of paper here. Okay, so I'm just going to read this first one off. The first one was, there will be a sixth seeded team in this year's AFC Conference Championship round. Now, I got that right. I said true. Now, my logic was wrong because I think I said Minnesota would win.
Yeah, you were still on the Kirkers bandwagon.
But, hey, I got it right because the Tennessee Titans went on to win the game. Both of you two gentlemen said false. And right over Swigard's name, emphatically in quotations, it says, not the Titans.
Oh, boy. You hated the six seeds. You especially hated the team that killed Baltimore.
You had the same logic as me, but you said emphatically not the Titans. So I got that one right. The other ones we got, Lamar Jackson will have more rushing yards than Henry in their game. You and I got that right, Swigard. At false. Sprager, you said true, although it was somewhat close. I think Lamar had like 130 yards. Seahawks-Packers game will go to overtime. I don't know why you said you rolled the dice on that one. You said true.
Yeah.
Sprager and I got that right.
That's a pretty big gamble going with overtime as a bet.
Yeah. What were they down? Five? If they would have got the two-point conversion, there would have been a decent chance.
You just needed a field goal,
potentially. And then the last one we all got right, although it didn't look good early, the Chiefs will cover the 10-point spread.
We got lucky on that one.
We did. I'll take it.
All righty, here we go. Number one, Titans running back Derrick Henry on a record-setting rushing pace, going over 180 yards in each of his last three games. True or false, Henry will rush for 180 or more yards in the AFC title game against the Chiefs.
I do not think that they're going to go to the Super Bowl. And I say that because I don't want them to go to the Super Bowl.
I know.
I want to put it in the universe of the matchup I want to see is clearly Kansas City and San Francisco. And so if I'm to believe that Tennessee does lose, they could win. So don't mark anything down that I'm saying anything egregious.
I'm marking it down.
It's Henry will have rushed for 180 or more. If they do win, I don't think they'll win. I think Kansas City keeps him kind of below in check. Like, I'll say below 130.
Okay.
So maybe he still gets like 120 or 125, but not quite what they need.
I will say, now, gambling against Derrick Henry at this point of the season feels pretty dumb.
I feel dumb right now, so I'll tell you that right now as a guy who already picked.
I'm going to jump in the dumb bin with you, and I'm going to say this is false as well. Now, my logic on it is this. What New England and Baltimore haven't been able to do is make Tennessee play from behind. They've led, and you know, they had the goal line stand against New England. They got off to a good start against Baltimore. They've been able to play their style of football.
Yeah.
New England has a quarterback that belongs in a retirement home, and Baltimore was banged up on offense. All their tight ends were out or got hurt during the game, and Mark Ingram was banged up. Kansas City's not that. Kansas City is the best offense in the NFL. They have been for large chunks of this season. Mahomes is healthy. They're ready to go. I don't see them shutting down Kansas City. At some point, the Chiefs will build a lead in this game. And you're not just going to be able to turn it around and hand the ball off to Derrick Henry the entire time. I think because of that, this is false. He will not get to 180.
Yeah, Tennessee doesn't like it from behind, but I think Kansas City, if they win the toss, they should take the ball. Take the ball and go score. What?
Thanks.
For what?
Okay. False.
How's your behind doing?
Oh, you guys are disgusting. You just said that they haven't played from behind.
Yeah, they haven't played from behind.
Okay, all right. I see where we're going here today on a Tuesday.
No, Henry will be in the buck 25 range, but yeah, they're going to have to throw it at some point.
Look at you and me thinking the same thing.
Yeah. Chiefs quarterback Patrick Mahomes has thrown three or more touchdowns in six of the 15 games he's played this season, including the playoffs. True or false, Mahomes will throw at least three touchdown passes against the Titans in the AFC Championship.
I'm going to say this is true. I think Patty Mahomes is going to have himself a big game. He had a big game last year in the AFC Championship game in the second half. I think they're going to be more prepared the start of this game than they were against Houston. Understand like how big an opportunity this is to get a 9-7 team win their first two games and come to your place.
Right.
I will say that this is true. He will at least throw three touchdown passes. He's a machine.
Now people joking about
quit reading the text line.
Tennessee's
we're never going to finish this
positions.
Segment.
Definitely a missionary team. I'm going to say that this is
true. Yeah, but like really effective.
Yeah.
Really effective.
Very simple. Just get the job done.
And you're kind of like
nothing too creative.
You're like, really?
You know?
That's all we're doing? But yeah. The lady walks away going, it is the most amazing thing I've ever done.
I had a great time.
I never saw it coming. Derrick Henry's huge.
I'm going to say this is true.
question is, will he throw all three of them in one quarter?
Wow.
That's the question.
You're going blowout, aren't you?
I've lost more money on Tennessee than any team in the NFL this year. I'm gambling against them again this weekend.
Can I tell you a fun fact? I did not gamble on them on the app. They're the one team I didn't gamble on.
In the Baltimore game?
Yeah, I went 4-0, but they're the only game I didn't gamble because I'm like, Tennessee always screws me.
Should have parlayed it, man.
Number three, 49ers and Packers defenses combined to record 11 sacks in their divisional round playoff wins. True or false? There will be more sacks than touchdown passes combined in the NFC Championship game.
More sacks than touchdown passes combined. I will say that this is true. Because I think we sometimes forget that Green Bay's got a couple of guys that can get after the quarterback a little bit. San Francisco, we know their pass rush looks healthy. I think they're going to sack Rodgers a couple of times. And, you know, both teams, I mean, San Francisco, when they get around the goal line, they like to run the football. So I wouldn't be surprised if Garoppolo doesn't have a ton of TD passes. And you got Jones and Green Bay. I'm going to say this is true.
I'm going to go. I want to go false. And the only reason I want to go false here is because I just think that San Francisco's run game won't be quite as effective. I think Green Bay is really going to key in on that and just say, if we can stop this run, Jimmy G has to beat us, and we feel good about that. And I also don't expect San Francisco to get to Aaron Rodgers like they did in the last time they played, where he barely could ever snap the ball, and he threw for 104. Yeah. So I think Rodgers goes for two. I think Jimmy G is going to have to throw three. I don't know if there's going to be more than five sacks in this game. I'm going to go false.
I'm going false, too. I think there's going to be a decent amount of touchdown passes, five or six. I also think Rodgers is going to be quick on the trigger. He might throw a lot of balls away to avoid the sack, to keep that and not take the punishment he did last time. I don't know. I think San Francisco really wants to try and run the football and will only pass either when they have to or when they want to. So I will go false there. Finally,
yep.
Packers wide receiver Davante Adams has caught seven or more passes in eight of the 13 games he played this season, including their playoff victory over the Seahawks. True or false, Adams will have fewer than seven catches against the 49ers in the NFC title game.
I'm going to say this is false. I think they know how valuable he is, and he has to have more than seven touches. If he doesn't, they're going to get blown out.
He's all they got.
And I think Green Bay is actually going to keep this one a lot closer than when they last played. I'm going to go false. I think Adams is going to be a huge part of what they're off. I mean, it already is, but I think they're going to find ways to get him the ball in unconventional situations and get him more touches because they know how valuable he is.
Yeah, Richard Sherman's playing at a really high level still, and he was ranting and raving about it after the game on Saturday or Sunday, whatever day that game was. But what Green Bay can do and what they did against Seattle is get creative where you line them up. They knew the weakness on the Seattle defense was who was going to cover them in the nickel and in the slot, and they took advantage of it. Ugo Amadi was a mismatch. We talked about it last week, and it killed him in the fourth quarter on that third and long especially. I think they do the same thing this week. They got to get him involved in the offense. They'll find creative places to get him the football and line him up. This is false.
I think this is true. Richard Sherman will take this personally. I think they'll have some safety help as well against him and force the other receivers to come up with big plays. They're more equipped to do that than what Seattle had. So plus they more likely to play zone than Seattle did as well. So I think he'll be just under seven.
All right, there you go. NFL true or false every Tuesday at 1:30. We'll grade it again next week, and we'll have a reaction to conference championships and then talk about Super Bowl Sunday. You realize there are only 2 days of football left.
Yeah, why did you just make me sad?
That's all there is, man. You got this Sunday, and then you wait a week, and then two Sundays from now.
So then we dive into the NBA? Blazer basketball?
That's a question for later in the week.
They beat the Hornets. Anybody know? Anybody care?
No. I did because I actually took the Hornets on the money line because they were like plus 380. And ooh. I was like, that's worth the value right there.
Well, they blew a big lead and the Hornets actually took a lead. So you were feeling good. And then Tolliver
feeling great.
Went off.
It's feeling great.
I can't believe I watched that game this morning.
You did?
I don't know.
Something's wrong with him.
Yeah, I got a problem.
You think I have problems.
Yeah, that's an issue.
Issues.
That's an issue.
Got issues, bud.
Okay, well, we'll figure some out, but at least we got a couple more weeks left of football before it's all said and done. Let's get to a big Northwest college football note that broke last night by somebody on the sideline of the title game. Bruce Feldman reported Washington State has found their next head coach. How do we feel about it? What kind of impact will it have on the conference? Get to that crunch time next on The Fan.
The pressure's on.
We have an opportunity to reestablish ourselves, get a big win. Not all is lost.
Who's feeling the heat?
Now we got to go home and make sure that, you know, we take care of business there. Shame on us if we don't.
It's crunch time. A look at the hottest topic in sports. Brought to you by Crunch Fitness. As low as $9.95 per month. No hassle, no pressure, no gimmicks, and no judgments.
Hey, Crunch Time, brought to you by Crunch Fitness, where their trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time. I was not at the Glorious House of Gains today.
No days off!
No, Bill, I did take a day off. I'll be back tomorrow.
Hey, Bill, the playoffs are going. Where's your hard work right now?
Where you at, Bill? Huh? Bill? Let me get something in really quickly here, because coming up at the top of the hour, we are going to talk to John Heyman, who is Radio.com Sports MLB Insider. John Heyman. Yeah, that John Heyman. And it is brought to you by the new gas-powered Sprinter for Mercedes-Benz vans. That's coming up at the top of the hour. We'll talk about the Astros situation and Alex Cora. Also, the mail sack in the final hour, so get your questions in 55305. Last night during the national championship, the Pac-12 was not the only Pac-12 that wasn't just officiating. There's another one that came out towards the end of the game, and that was that Washington State has moved swiftly to hire their next head coach, and that is Nick Rolovich, who's coming to you from Hawaii. For those of you who don't know his path, he played at Hawaii back in the day, bounced around in the Arena League a couple of years. He's been in Hawaii basically for the last decade. He had a brief stint at Nevada as their offensive coordinator from 2012 to 2015. But other than that, he was at Hawaii from 2008 to 2011 and then back in 2016. And he actually had some pretty good years there for a program that under Norm Chow, they won 10 games in 3-plus seasons under Norm Chow.
And Norm Chow actually had a nice run for himself at Hawaii.
You're
saying 10?
10 wins in 3 seasons, yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Norm Chow did not have a nice run in Hawaii.
I think it got off to a good start, and then it kind of flamed out. So it was rough. So he took over for Chow, went 7-7, 3-9, 8-6. And then this past season, they won 10 games, went to the conference championship.
Yeah, they won a division.
They were 2-1, went to 3 bowl games, and went 2-1 all 3 times going to the Hawaii Bowl. But Washington State finally their next man, Nick Rolovich.
And by everybody's opinion, this seems to be slam dunk hire. And when you get great college football minds writing up about this and discussing it, and everybody's saying this makes sense, you tend to just kind of believe him until he proves otherwise. His offense is exactly what they're looking for. Mm-hmm. This was when it was announced that Leach was going to Mississippi State, the one thing we had talked about on this show was that, are you in a position where you just hire the right guy and you pick right back up where you were and it's almost as if nothing happened? The danger in that is I think you undervalue Mike Leach and his abilities a little bit. But ultimately, with the players they've recruited, the players they have returning, this is exactly what you're looking for. The guy runs a very similar system. You go look at the stats since he's been in Hawaii, and when he was, you know, when he's been around Hawaii, they are at the top of the passing stat book in the Mountain West. Mm-hmm. And then in Nevada, they had some decent years too. Like, ultimately, I think they weren't going to go get that prized big name that might be out there for some, but getting a guy like Rolovich, who quietly did a pretty good job at Hawaii for 3 seasons, that is what you do to keep continuity. You don't have to go way above and go, well, we need to pay out of yin yang to go get this guy to even come to Pullman, nor do you want to go take a flyer on maybe a coordinator who's been hot for a year or two. Go get a proven coach who runs a very similar system, who knows how to win. I know it's going to be an adjustment for him, so I'm sure he'll have his struggles, because I think you see some of these coaches come over from smaller conferences and there's a bit of an adjustment. But offensively, he's kind of what you were looking for in terms of fit and continuity.
Yeah, it'll be funny when Washington State plays Oregon State next year, because remember, you had that controversy. I guess they faced each other last year, too, because Oregon State was at Hawaii. But you had the controversy when Jonathan Smith was sending recruiting letters to Hawaii players and Rolovich had put him on blast on Twitter and stuff.
Well, there was a player that ended up transferring and going to Hawaii.
Oh, was there really?
At the end of the year, yeah.
I didn't see that. So that's kind of a funny note. He has had a good run at Hawaii. You're right there. It sounds like, and I didn't follow this as closely as some diehard Cougs did, I'm sure, The only other name that I really saw, that at least that was reported, was Grinch. They wanted to interview Grinch, and Grinch turned him down. Said he was tempted by it, but he's staying as a defense coordinator at Oklahoma, waiting for other opportunities. So when that happened, I think my mindset was basically all along, you got to find somebody that knows how to work with the players you got. Yeah. They have recruited to a specific system. And if you were to bring in a guy like Mario Cristobal, for example, who wants to run that style of offense, that's not going to work out for you for a couple of years because you're not built to win that way. You're built to win throwing the football and spreading people out, and that's your strength as a program. And so I think this was you were just kind of running through your mind of names that were in that category, and Rolovich was always one that kind of popped up for folks. He seems to be a good personality guy. Seems funny on Twitter. We reached out to him to hopefully get him on the show. The main thing that they need to do at Washington State, because I don't really have a doubt about his ability to coach offense. Like, he's proven it. Now, there's a different level going from the conferences that are below the Pac-12 to the Pac-12. It's going to be a tougher slate for him, no doubt about that. But Washington State needs to get back to playing competent defense. Like, that needs to be priority number one. And he's got to go find a defense coordinator, and you got to find an up and coming guy established. I don't know where you go there, but that needs to be priority number one, because you look last year when they had a quote unquote down year at 6-6, they blew a 30-point lead to UCLA. They couldn't get a stop to save their lives. They had the lead against Oregon late, gave up a touchdown or a field goal drive with a minute left. Like, a lot of their losses throughout the course of the year, they just, like, where the hell was the defense, man? And that's when Mike Leach finally got it rolling at Wazoo and improved from 6-6 or 7-5. It was because they took that step defensively. He needs that at Wazoo.
Well, Grinch obviously had success coaching defense there. And then the guy after Grinch left, because that was a question mark, was Trace Claes. Mm-hmm. And Trace Claes came in and they picked right up, and they were actually slightly better defensively. And then this year was just weird. I don't think we're ever going to get the story of it, but the whole unfolding of him abruptly quitting in the middle of the year and, like, not really holding resentment and nobody really discussing it, that's a very odd story. So this year was kind of just designed, or not designed, but I think kind of in the cards to just be one of those weird funky years. But a funky year in Pullman is 6-6.
Which is good, yeah.
I think Cougar fan would take that every time, and now you're just hoping that the learning curve of being consistently in a Power 5 versus occasionally playing a Power 5, you hope that learning curve isn't that big, because otherwise he'll be able to get this going. And I don't know if he'll ever have 10 or 11 wins the way that Leach did, but he could probably get back and put Washington State in an 8-9 win position, maybe be talked about once in a while going into a year. And I think obviously another big part for them is, will he beat Washington? Leach went 8 years and didn't do it once.
Yeah, or he didn't beat Peterson. I think he beat him Peterson, his first year.
Yeah, right.
He didn't beat
Peterson,
Chris Peterson.
Sorry.
He was like 1-7 against.
Won
his first one and then lost like 7 straight. So.
5 or 6 years, right, with Peterson?
Yep, so he had a rough run in the Apple Cup. So Washington State makes a hire. Nick Rolovich is their new head coach from Hawaii. Seems like an interesting dude. He tweeted a picture of a cougar behind a tree. I'm all for it. We'll see how it pans out. Up in the Palouse, Crunch Time brought to you by Crunch Fitness, where their trainers can work with anyone on how to lose weight the correct way and gain strength at the same time. Locally owned and operated with 6 locations to serve you. Lots to get to in the final hour of the mail sack. A couple of leftover notes from yesterday. Tony Romo might be getting a big payday. We'll get to all that stuff. But we'll start, though. The Astros fired their GM and their manager after punishment came down for Major League Baseball, and now Boston's awaiting. What's next on this? John Heyman, MLB insider for Radio.com. He's going to join us to start the final hour next. Don't go anywhere. Dirt and Sprague on 1080 The Fan.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.